Warner, what's happening? This the Maniacal Menace, Kyle Smith, speaking from the future about the past and the present. Basically everybody's got their own little origin story. And, this is mine. Listen up and enjoy these words. You can find me at maniacalmenace.com. Maniacal Menace on Instagram. That's ManiacalMenace.
It's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
What's up? Goddamn. About time. Welcome. This is, I'm Kyle Smith, the Maniacal Menace, and this is Tell Me a Joke. Episode 1. Basically, this is just me explaining about what this podcast is going to be about. Tell me a joke. The four most detrimental words as a comedian that you can hear. Just, tell me. I hate that phrase. Tell me a joke. Once I knew I was a comic, like, that phrase there just, it stuck with me, and it was just the worst shit ever. Can't stand that. And basically, what this is, it's a guideline of chasing the dream. First episode, I guess I'll just give you my backstory on what I'm doing here, why I'm here, how I got here, and what it's taken for me to get to where I'm trying to go. I'm trying to be the best, man. I'm trying to be that goddamn Richard Pryor, fucking Robin Williams, Dane Cook. I'm trying to be that nigga, you know, and this is what it's taken for me to get there. This is my guideline. This is, if anybody, you know, cares to listen to how this journey is going to go, basically this podcast is going to be it, and then I'll be talking to friends along the way. How their journeys are, what it's taken for them to get there, what their struggles that they've gone through. You know, it's a struggle. It is. It ain't easy out here. You know, we all trying to make it. And basically, I know I'm gonna make it. And you know, so this is telling me a joke. Guideline of chasing the dream. I think that's perfect, you know. How did I start this? Me, myself. I had no idea. I had no idea I wanted to be a comic. Don't nobody tell you that you're going to be a comedian when you get older, you know. Ain't nobody told me this. And this life comes, this process comes with ups and downs. Man, you gotta be crazy to wanna do this. It's wild. This is wild. Like, I had no idea. What you see on TV is just the glory of us basking in it, but you can't even fathom of until you actually in it, in the trenches of what it takes to become a comedian. You gotta give up your soul. You gotta be prepared. Yeah. You gotta be funny. You gotta be funny. And I'm not just here just to talk to other comedians as well. You know, sometimes it'll just be me here. It'll just be me hollering at y'all, chit-chatting, what's up, you know. But other times, it'll be other artists in general, not just other comedians, but I'm not just a comedian, I'm a poet, I'm an electrician, I do a lot, we'll get into that later, you know, I might cut this out and then start a whole just going into the fucking backstory, but This is just a guideline or a rough. I've started this so many times, and it's just like, fuck it, I gotta go with it. You know, so this is this is the process of going with it. You know, you gotta, for all those up and coming comedians, I've only been doing this for about 7 years. For all those up and coming comedians, man, keep grinding, keep writing, and keep writing. Stay funny. Punch that shit up. And check with other people. Just go around and live life. Live life. Enjoy it. Taking it. Embrace it. Observe. Read the room. Feel the energy. You need to pick those things up. You know, but I don't wanna teach. I don't wanna preach. This is just a rough upbringing, basically. Yeah, I could probably get into this later, but it's crazy because no one knows your calling. You don't know what you're gonna do, what you wanted to be when you get older. You get fed so much shit, and until you actually are developed in your mind to where you actually know what you want to do, it is, you're just all over the place. And this will be Tell Me a Joke episode 1, my interviewee Kyle Smith, me, the Maniacal Menace. So why do you want to be a comedian? What makes you want to be a comedian? How come you're a comedian? Backstory. Well, I had no clue. Like I said, I had no clue I wanted to be a comedian. It's crazy because I didn't grow up. I grew up in a fun family. Like my household, I grew up with my dad, and I didn't grow up with my mom due to other reasons. You know, it's been like that since I was little. Ever since I can remember, I was just always with my dad. I used to see my mom go, you know, separate families. Born in 85, so I'm 34 years old. I've been doing comedy for about 7-8 years. But I'm also a poet, so I also have another lane. I don't just do comedy, and I don't just do poetry. I kind of mash both of them together into this thing I call comedy poetry. And not too many people are doing that now. And so it's created another pathway that I can kind of step in by myself and shine. So I think I got something here. But back to I had no idea. I honestly just thought I was a terrible child back then. Like, I was one of those kids, I had ADHD. And, my parents always subscribed me. I had to take Ritalin. I was one of those kids that had to take Ritalin to calm down and shit. I was always mischievous. I was always getting into things. You know, I was very talkative. Nothing ever dawned on me to say, hey, you're gonna be a comic when you get older, Kyle. No, nothing pointed that at, like, it's so flabbergasting to say that I'm here now and I've never, like, growing up, I've never took two thoughts into this. I've been in New Orleans. I've grown up, born and raised in New Orleans. I've been in there 34 years, okay? And my situation now, to say that I'm where I'm at now, I am in Los Angeles, okay? Basically, what I did is I uprooted, gave everything up, and just moved out here to chase this motherfucking dream because I think I got some potential and I can make this. I can make it. I got this shit. And so, but my whole life, nothing said that, hey, this is what you was gonna do. I thought the third thing that I was going to do was going to become a Navy SEAL. Like, I thought I was going to be a SEAL when I got older. I told my grandparents. People used to ask in school. Thought that was a badass thing to do. All my people were in the military. I'm raised in a military family. My dad's in the Air Force. My stepmom, she was also in the Air Force. I was raised stern, you know, born in 85. So that means, you know, in the 90s, spare the rod, spoil the child. My dad did not spare the rod, nor at all. And I got my ass bust a lot. But that was life. I was a bad kid, and I understood that, you know. But on top of that, though, it was, I had like a, I guess you could say like a Jackson 5 relationship. You know, he instilled in me a wonderful work ethic. Just, if you want something, you're going to work for it, basically. And I've always kept that deep back in my mind, because that's, if I want something, I'm going to have to work for it. And it's held up ever since. But that's because that's how he was raised back in that old 70s upbringing. Boy, shut up, be a man or be poo poo, you know. I'll beat the shit out of you if you don't go ahead and do what you need to do. That type of shit. So that just trickled down over into raising me and my brothers. And I got a brother. I got two brothers and a sister. And, you know, we was raised, all raised like this. Very military, very, very stern. But it's still like none of that said comedian. And my dad was an amazing person. He's like my hero, you know. Very silly man, but everybody in my family was silly. So it just kind of felt natural, you know. If I thought that if I could make my dad laugh, then yeah, that shit had to be funny. And that was one thing that I always try to do, is make my dad laugh. And it was crazy, because him being so stern, that's all I wanted to do, was see him smile and shit. I can't really say that I wanted him to do much. I was just glad that he was there. You know, most people ain't raised with a father and shit. So, you know, I had mine, but my mama wasn't there. Like, my real mom, I used to have to go see her. It's a whole nother story when it comes to that. You know, I guess you could say all this kind of shaped me into being who I am. You know, going to school. I was raised Catholic, so going to Catholic school was one thing. You know, I remember being at Catholic school, and they had nuns that would be smoking cigarettes. And to be like 6 years old, 7 years old, however, to be that young at a Catholic school, to know that nuns are supposed to be all holy and sanctified, but to see them sneak around the school bus and go smoke them a pack of fucking Marlboros and come back smelling like cigarettes, saying, no, they don't smoke. Like, that fucks with you a little bit. That fucks with you. And then, like, as a Catholic, being raised Catholic, having to go to catechism and shit, and having, not being able to eat meat on Fridays when Lent came around, I never understood it, but church was fun. Church was real easy to go deal with. Boom, stand up, sit down for about an hour. We good, we gone. Eventually, after a while, like, we just switched. Like, my dad met my stepmom, stepmom came around, Catholicism went out the window. We done switched over into Christianity, and that fucked my whole head up. I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. So what about this religion? What was this that we were doing? And it's very confusing because now we're doing this and we can do these things now. Oh, I like this religion a little bit better because I can eat meat on Fridays and all that other shit with some bullshit, I guess. But now I gotta be at church for 3 hours. I don't get the sacrifices that we're making for this Lord that we're not really sure who's there. But that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying the switch from Catholicism to Christian, Presbyterian, non-denomination, it made me think. As a young age, now being older now, I can think about, yeah, it fucked me up. And I kind of like it. I like that it did. I like that I got to see that. Yeah, but still, never dawned on me like, hey, these would be things that you would probably be talking about on stage or on a podcast or something like that. Nah, that never hit me like that, you know. And it's my life was wild. I had ADHD. That's what I was told. I had ADHD. The psychiatrist that I had to go to, a psychiatrist when I was young, because my parents, they were like, well, what the fuck's wrong with him? Why you don't want to keep still? We didn't understand. It was like, he won't shut the fuck up. He won't keep still. He won't calm down. Like, we don't know what the fuck wrong with him. Like, take him in. I got sent to a psychiatrist, which was fun. I enjoyed the psychiatrist. Going there, doing like crazy shit. I'm in Rorschach's. I used to say Rickshaw's. Rickshaw's is not the Rorschach's. Rorschach's test. She gave me a Rorschach's test. There was lots of testing and shit. There's lots of weird questions and stuff that I would be asked. She would talk to me. And I remember when she took out the Rorschach test and she showed me a few ink blots. And the responses that I gave, I guess, threw her off. I guess she wasn't really prepared for whatever I was going to tell her. And she was like, is that what you really think? And I was like, yeah. She was like, you have a lot of thoughts in your head like that? I was like, all the time. They just be running around, so many thoughts. You like, I be wanting to like express those thoughts, but then I forget them because other thoughts be coming. She's like, you know what? You need a book and you just need to write those thoughts down as soon as they come. Just write them down. And I was like, oh, okay. And ever since then, I've been writing ever since. Writing poems, raps, rhymes. Never wrote jokes. Never wrote jokes at a young age. I remember actually having to go to a CAT scan. My dad kept me up. He had to keep me up at night just because I was going to have to take a CAT scan the next day and it was going to need me to not move for a very long time. And I'm a hyperactive kid. There's no way that I cannot not move, you know. But in this CAT scan, you don't want to fuck nothing up, so you can't move. So basically, my daddy kept me up that whole night, and then the next day we went. I forget what time it was. It was a weird time, I believe, and we went to go get this CAT scan, and they hooked me up with all of these little suckers all over my face and my body. And then they slid me in this tube. And it was like, you're going to go to sleep now. And I was like, all right. And I woke up and then that was it. And I'm not really sure what happened from then on, but I was prescribed Ritalin. Yeah. Riddling was nice. Riddling was nice. It heightened my imagination. I was very imaginative as a kid. Like, I would draw. It runs in my family. My dad draws, so I would draw. I would draw a lot, and I would always be writing because the psychiatrist told me to write. She did, and that's what she did, and I did, and I wrote a lot. I used to, in high school, I guess, no, actually, I remember my first rhyme that I wrote when I was little. I guess I was like six. I wrote it, and I remember I rapped it to my brother and my mama in Tennessee in a hot tub bathtub inside the apartment or whatever the fuck we were in. And it goes, my name is Kyle C. That's K-Y-L-E. And I be coming from the free throw line, and I be funking on them instead of dunking on them. Coming around off that ground, I be gliding like, I be flying like Drexler, gliding through the air. Some shit like that. Man, but see, I was like fucking 8 or 9 whenever I wrote that. And I was very proud of myself. I was like, holy shit. And I memorized it, and I rapped it to my mom on it. And I was like, hi. But it still, you know, none of that plays a part until, like, it just sticks with you. And that was one of the things that stuck with me. And taking Ritalin just made me focus. But on the come down, I wanted to murder somebody. Like, it was a terrible come down, and like, it was a good thing to focus on. Like, but if I would focus on the whatever I would focus on, it wouldn't be the work that I needed to focus on. I would just go in it. I would go ham on whatever I was doing. I draw a lot, and drawing brought me to a safer place, because, you know, being a hyperactive kid like that, I got punished a lot. Punished a lot, okay? Coming up from those, I got ass whoopings, a lot of them. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. That was just one of those things that instilled in me to be a stronger person. Yeah. Going to high school, taking Ritalin, I was good with my grades and everything. I was very intelligent because back then I used to have to go to Catholic schools and private schools and shit. I was a very privileged kid, very privileged. I always had a 2-story house. So it was very crazy. Every house that we've been in was always a 2-story house. Right? My dad worked. I don't know. I guess he worked hard. I'm not really sure. I know he was the boss or whatever he was doing. They called him Mr. Cheese and shit. They had little inside jokes and all that. And I just knew he did something important. But he always provided. It was crazy, you know, because my mom wasn't there. It never seemed like it was hard for him. He did what he had to do, and it's like, this is like a tribute to my dad or some shit like that. But this is the backstory. This is the first episode, and going from Catholic to private schools, being privileged like that, I was always a very smart kid, always having to go to my room and shit, because if you were punished. Whenever we get punished, like, there ain't no TV, you can't go outside, you can't play no video games, you gotta read a book or listen to the goddamn radio. And by the time you listen to everything that's on the hip-hop stations, like, y'all, I gotta switch over to alternative rock. I know a whole bunch of shit that just takes me down nostalgia. But I was always intelligent, so going from Catholics and private school, by the time I got to high school, things kind of done switched up. We moved into an area where we moved into a subdivision. which was, oh, I thought we moved on up. I was like, shit, yeah, and we got goddamn security around us and shit, and we got to go through some gates to get to our house. And we left the fucking hood. We out of the hood, and we done fucking George and Wheezy'd our way up in this motherfucker. I was amazed by that shit. I was like, fuck yeah, and whatever my dad doing, hey, you killing it right now, you know, to another two-story house in a subdivision. But no more private schools. They tried to get me into a better school, but it was a public school. It was a magnet school and the car alumni. And that really, those 4 years is what like really switched that switch on in my brain to like, oh nigga, the world is grimy and nigga, you need to be tough. Cause I'm a small dude, okay? I'm small and I know I'm small. And there's some bullshit out here. And like, so you definitely gotta fight for yours. And going from Catholics and private schools, nigga, talking proper, going to a goddamn public school, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready at all. I thought I was. I was so happy. I was like, yeah, finally, by the time I get here, you know, I thought I'd be able to get to wear my own clothes and shit, you know, not have to wear a uniform no more. But which was a good thing that this school that I did go to, that year that I went to that school, we had to wear uniforms. So that was a good thing because my style and taste, if we didn't have to wear uniforms, was terrible. And that would have made it even worse. Because by the time I got to high school, immediately when I got on a bus for the first day of ninth grade, okay, the first day of ninth grade, this is... just to let y'all know, this is how this went. This is the year 2000, okay? In the year 2000, just understand the status of certain, just to understand the status of black people, okay? So, first day on the bus, leaving to go to my first day of school as a ninth grader and in the car. I want to be cool and... they had these dudes that came up to me at the back of the bus and was like, hey man, who you is, yada, 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 what you do, and all that. And was like, I'm Kyle, you know, I'm here, ninth grade. And it was like, oh, cool. Well, yeah, man, you out here, you getting pussy and shit? It's like, you know what? At that time, I did just get some pussy. I did. And I was excited to tell him that. I was like, yeah, I got me some pussy. It was good, you know? Thinking that, you know, I'm bonding. We're about to make friends. Lo and behold, nah, not at all. Nah, that's not their motive. They just want some insightful information to go ahead and spread it without the use of cell phones at this point in time. But they asked me, and it was like, oh, so you ate pussy before? I was like, ah. And at that time, my first time having sex, I did eat pussy. I did. And I enjoyed it. But in year 2000, as a black man, no, you should not eat pussy. But I was like, I'm not going to lie. I think I'm making friends. Fuck yeah. Yeah, I ate that pussy. And it's like, oh. Boom. Light bulbs and everything went off in their head. And it's like, well, we know how we're going to ruin this new nigga. And then they conceded, and then they continued to just badger with questions from then on. It's like, oh yeah, how'd you do it? What did it look like? How did it smell? What did it taste like? And my honest ass, because, you know, coming from the upbringing that I've came from the schools that I've came from, why not tell me exactly what I thought it might have tasted like? I thought it tasted like sour milk the first time I tasted it. Now to this day, that probably had a little tainted tainted-ness to it. But who gives a fuck? All right? Sour milk is what I told him. And sour milk was the wrong answer to tell these two niggas at first day, ninth grade, at this new public school that I ain't never been to before. Yeah, that shit spreads like goddamn fucking rosy posy ass rashes. Ring around the rosy, the outbreak. Anyway, polio, the plague, nigga, that shit spread. Wasn't ready. Got to school, I was a nigga that ate pussy. From ninth to like, maybe end of 10th grade year, I was that nigga that ate pussy, and I had to defend myself from that. I had to get my chops up, and being small as that nigga that ate pussy, that don't normally eat pussy, you're gonna get pretty close to fighting a lot of motherfuckers. And yeah, I did. I got pretty close. But having an older brother, which was very helpful. My older brother was always there, and he's an awesome dude too, because he made me tough. Like, my dad got the work ethic in me, but my brother, that nigga made me tough. Like, ever since I was little, I always just wanted to, I looked up to that motherfucker. And, you know, always strong, always, he used to watch a lot of Bruce Lee and shit. So, shit, if I just imitate this nigga, I'm pretty sure I could fight just like this motherfucker. And I remember being little, I used to always pick up on rocks and shit, just to show him how strong I was. Like, pick up on stones. And like, I just kept doing it, and I got really, really strong. So, you know, growing up under him, like being an older brother in the 90s, you get beat up on a lot. You get beat up on, you get tough though. You learn how to talk back, you learn how to punch, you learn how to hit, you learn how to take a punch, you know, you learn how to not take shit. And being able to not take shit feels good. Yeah, being able to blow up on somebody knowing that, oh, I can defeat you if I need to. And then having the intellect to be like, I can outsmart you and make you feel dumb as shit. And then put these hands on you after that. And then make you feel real belittled. Because another little nigga done smashed you down after he told you some intellectual shit. Yeah, that's an arsenal for your ass. That's an arsenal for a bully. And I was prepared. So most of them didn't want that. The first time I've gotten to a fight in school, I threw this nigga into the glass. I threw this nigga into the window. Boom. Everybody woke up there. It was like, oh, Kyle don't play. Because, you know, I'm only nice to a certain extent. I got a little Hulk inside me. My bad. I don't mean to. It's not a Napoleon complex. I'm just saying. You know? But that's basically how I kind of survived or was able to manage through high school. You know, I also was able to get on the football team. I really wanted to play football. Like, that was my thing. That was my thing, the toughness. Like, I played a lot of sports. I ran track. I was on the swim team, you know. But football was my thing. I really wanted to get on the football team. Like, when I was little, I used to play for the little pop leagues and shit. But I would never be able to get on the team because I was too small. I was always too small. I would always have to play the intramural teams. You know, at one point they wanted to put lead in my pants to make me heavier because I was real, real good, but I wasn't big enough. So, you know, I finally, in high school, you know, finally got to that point to where I was able to get back in the graces of people in there, have my own little clique, you know. Fucking was able to roll around with some homies, and I got up on the football team. I made the football team. It was crazy because it was the varsity team. And it's not that often that everybody gets to make that cut. And it was like three cuts. And I remember being on the team. I remember fucking playing my ass off. Trying hard. And they, I made the cut. I made the cut on the football team. I was excited about that. Then I went home, told my daddy. It's like, Dad, I made the football team. It's like, it's very hard to make the team. Not everybody make the team. Me being my size, I made the team, Daddy. And my dad told me, when he asked me, he was like, well, what your grades look like? And now, I was always a smart kid, you know. My grades was always pretty good, but my dad was always academics first, then sports and games second. He would allow me to play sports as long as my grades was doing well. Now, I've already had a stint in middle school where I was going to Believer's Life Christian Academy. Believer's Life Christian Academy is a private school on the West Bank of New Orleans, Louisiana. And there is where I failed. I failed seventh grade. I got held back. Now, all right, I can't say that I failed, but I got held back in seventh grade because the teacher, I did okay. I just passed barely. But the principal, my parents came and talked to the principal. The principal was like, well, he could get past to the next grade, but he probably wouldn't do so well. He'd be falling behind. He might fail anyway. Or we can just hold him back. He can repeat the grade, and then he will be able to catch up. And they gave me the option. Now, understand this. This school, this private school. Now, fuck that. That doesn't even matter. They gave me the option. And I was like, hey, either you can go ahead and struggle in this next grade, but go to this next grade, the eighth grade, and struggle through it, or you can repeat the seventh grade and make it a little bit easier. And I was like, no, I don't want to repeat the seventh grade. All my friends are going to the eighth grade. I would prefer to be going to the eighth grade. And I thought, since it was giving me the decision that they were going to honor my decision, apparently not. No, they were like, nah, we're going to hold you back. And they kept me back in seventh grade. Mentally, you know what that does to a child or a seventh grader? Knowing that, oh, I had the chance to go forward. I want to go forward. Please don't hold me back. And still being held back. It fucked me up. Because on top of that, the next year, going to that same school, repeating that same grade, seeing my friends in the line for the eighth grade, and I have to come to line up for the line for the seventh graders, having to tell my friends that see me, hey, quit playing, Kyle, what you doing over there? Nothing. I'm in seventh grade again, yo. They're like, nah, man, I don't believe you. Yep. I'm not playing. And having to remake friends over in the seventh grade. Because your other friends in the eighth grade, and they're going to be gone pretty soon because they're going to graduate before you. They don't play. Parents don't play when it comes to grades. Parents don't play when it comes to academics. You know? So, when it came to, hey, oh, Dad, I made the football team. Let me see your grades. Show them the grades. It weren't that good. Dad was like, get the fuck off that team. He didn't say fuck. He don't ever curse like that. I don't think he ever cursed me ever. Very stern, man. He was like, get off that team. I was like, but I can pick this up. Like, I just made the team. Like, people my size don't make the team, Daddy. Like, I made the varsity team. I can actually probably play in a game. And he's like, I don't care. What did I tell you? Why is you still talking to me about this? And so I had to go to the coach and quit the team the next day. This sounds pretty fucked up. But yeah, I had to go to the coach and quit the team the next day. And I haven't cared for football ever since. I'm pretty sure I would have been a Rudy story if I'd have played football. I honestly, like when I was little, I wanted to be the star running back for the Dallas Cowboys. I have a picture of it, a little caricature picture. My teeth all crooked and shit, big face, star of the Dallas Cowboys, running back, boom, Heisman, hiking over these niggas. Nigga, you can't catch me, son. I'm too fast. I was too fast. I was too quick. Yeah, that was me. That's what I wanted to do. Then he's like, nah, get off that team. And yeah, so now I don't give a shit for football. Still had no idea I wanted to be a comic, though. Yeah, but I needed to do something. I can't believe like I got kicked off the team. So I was like, well, fuck. All right, I could work hard enough, pick up them grades, but I need to do something. You know, fucking, it's too late for football now. And I could tumble because my brother used to teach me how to flip and shit. And, you know, wanting to be like my brother, like the awesome fucking martial artist he was, you know, being in Taekwondo and all that, I gotta know how to flip if I want to be a Ninja Turtle, right? And what better way to be a Ninja Turtle than, you know, doing gymnastics in school? But my school didn't have gymnastics. I wish it did. It'd have been nice if they would have had gymnastics. They didn't. Closest thing they had was cheerleading. And I was like, well, fuck. I wanna be able to tumble because these niggas can't tumble. I saw them flipping outside in the backyard. I was like, these niggas can't tumble. I could tumble. Like, let me show these niggas up. And it was like, hey, how about you come join a team? And I was like, hey, that look gay. And he was like, ah, man, it ain't gay, man. It's just, you know, that's what you gotta do. You put you around a whole bunch of girls. I was like, I don't know, son. Don't look like you smashing none of them. He was like, man, just, you know, come on, try out. And if you don't like it, you ain't got to do it. Just, you know, come flip for us. And I was like, all right. So, you know, blase, blase, boom. I'm a cheerleader. I was a cheerleader for about 8 years. It's crazy how the world works. I was a really good cheerleader. Whenever I do something, I get really good at it. I get really good at it. Like, I got a unicycle and I learned how to ride it in 2 days. It's because I slept on it the first night. I didn't sleep on it, but like, I went to sleep and woke up, and the next day, boom, I was able to ride it. So, yeah, and yeah, 8 years. Damn good cheerleader, man. That was my thing. I had to do something, and, you know, I picked my grades up, and I was good from then on. Whenever I get to doing something, like, I get really, really good at it. Still to this day, I had no idea. Yeah. But I appreciate everything that was kind of like it. All this kind of like when I look at it, it kind of molded me into like being this person. You know, high school was something. I'm glad it changed me. I'm glad that it did, because it made me maybe be able to sit back and observe a lot. I dealt with a lot. You deal with a lot in high school, you know, and that prepares you. That prepares you for the world. Being in Chile, it wasn't easy. Ain't nothing in my life been easy. For 2 years at that school, I was the only male cheerleader there. And that made things difficult, even more difficult on top of just the normal bullying. So you think you got it easy, and then being small on top of that, nah, no, yeah, man. You think you got it. I mean, sure, this social shit would probably fucking ruin a kid's life nowadays, but nigga, what? You want to kill yourself over some dumb shit? Nigga, walk a mile in my shoes back in the 90s. Nigga threw out the word fag like it was candy. Like, ah, here you go, fag. Fucking gay asshole. Like, it's just, back then, you gotta be, it was just too much. It was just way too much. But it toughened you up, you know? I hated school. Fucking couldn't stay in school. Yeah, I guess that's when my mind started to actually veer off, because everything that I was telling me just like either was a lie or not there, you know? Like, I was raised to believe this, but then we switched and was believing that, and yeah, I could do this, but I can't do that, you know? Being restricted from this, but being able to do that, you know? Being this age, but not being able to go there. It was so wild, very sheltered, you know, very, very stern upbringing. Yeah, I loved to do cheerleading because it got me away from school, and it got me away from being home. Most of the time, I didn't want to be home. Most of the time, I didn't want to be at school, though. Fucking hated school, but did very well. I ran into when we moved to the subdivision, that's when I ran into my good friend Ian, and that's when like things took another level. Fucking, that's when we got introduced. A big weed head now, but for my 18th birthday, it's the first time I smoked weed ever. Haven't stopped since. Said it tastes like crawfish. It burned my throat. Burned my throat and smoked it through a little pipe. And he was like, oh man, the only way you're gonna fix it is if you hit it again and get harder. I was like, all right, sure. Ruined my room of fucking smoking experience for the first time. But yeah, that opened my mind to just being free in the world and being a free thinker, because I coming from a sheltered upbringing, noticed that all my friends were younger than me but had more freedom than I did. And I was like, how do y'all have so much freedom and I can't do this? Like, it just everything, it felt like I was so caged in. Like, all of this was just so blocked off. Like, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, and I didn't know how to release. So, you know, being the fucking ADHD kid I am, I used to sneak out and shit, go smoke, go fucking hang out, go fucking be a free person, and then come back home. And you know, I used to go vandalize things, just have a fun fucking time, but then coming back in and having to deal with just the reality of being on lock and key. Yeah. Which made my imagination of my home as like an Alcatraz. Always finding different ways to escape. My imagination will just take me to places like, oh, if I could, I want James Bond. I love spy movies for that reason. Like, I'm a big James Bond fan just because I like to tinker with shit. We used to have alarms every house we went to, and could be able to sneak out the house. I knew where each alarm was, like which door was chime, which window I can go out of. I used to sneak out the front window in the dining room, the room that you're not supposed to go in. I used to sneak out that window because it didn't have a sensor. And oh man, just fucking, because being in just so locked up, it got fun. Just the carving of David, boom, making me into this person. Like, I would really open my eyes up to comedy, like in high school, like towards the end when things got really fun. It's like MySpace came around, like people started to, or the world started to open up to itself, and fucking Dane Cook, motherfucking vicious circle, rough around the edges. Dane is what really opened my eyes to fucking comedy. Like, I knew about comedy. I knew about the Richard Pryor and, you know, Robin Williams and all that. My third eye wasn't awakened to everything. All is comedy. Like, once you notice, once you see, it's like that car. Like, once you want that certain car, like, I want this Mustang, and then you start seeing all those Mustangs, and once you get that Mustang, now you start seeing the same Mustang, like, you, yeah, it's like, once, once I noticed that that comedy was a thing, like, comedy was just everywhere after that, like, commercials, fucking TV shows, just everything was comedy. It's like, oh, wow, but at that time, it's, things still didn't hit me. Things still didn't fucking set into my mind that, maybe you should get into that. Being silly as a child, I guess I was a class clown. I'm not even sure. You know, I just understood that I was quick-witted, and I had to stand up for mine. And the only thing that was going to make me friends with other people was to make them laugh. That was my thing. I just get out of a awkward situation, have somebody smile. Now, don't be mad at me. Like, I don't want you to hurt me. Like, I'm the good guy. Smile, you know, things like that. Like, I've dealt with so much, and to hear the descriptiveness of Dane motherfucking Cook, it really, like, that shaped the rest of my high school years right there. Off into college, like, to where I would repeat him to my homie and everything. We were going to BK, gotta have the coops. We go to the BK lounge, we go to fucking Burger King, chill, go get us a fucking a dollar double cheeseburger and two apple pies. Gotta have the coops, man. Goddamn, this motherfucking Dane Cook. And things still never dawned on me that maybe I should look into comedy. Like, I once I got out of high school, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Like, I had no idea. You know, it got to the point to where I wanted to join the military. Everybody in my family is in the military, so I was just like, fuck it, like, that's what I'm gonna do, because I don't know what I want to do. My grades was good enough to you know, get into a college, but I don't know what college I wanted to go to. It was just a whole bunch of decisions. I was like, man, fuck this. I don't like school. I don't want to do school anymore. Why do I have to continue doing school? you know what? Fuck that. Let's go to the military. Fucking was gonna go to the military. That's when, that's around that time when Bush was just fucking up, going to war with a whole bunch of niggas. And it would have been a bad time for me to go to the military. You know, my grandma was like, "Nah, you don't need to do that." And I was like, "Okay, grandma. I've done many things because of just those few words from my grandmother. Very wise words, very, very much so. Like, because, boom, that would have been another one that would have just altered this whole little reality that I'm living right now, that butterfly effect. So I didn't. I decided to go to college. And the college that I decided to choose was the college that I went to, the college that I visited for a cheer camp. And that was Southeastern Louisiana. That was the first college I've been to, and I was like, "Huh, well, I've dealt with this before. This is a comfortable place. Might as well just go back there." Went to college to be a marine biologist, because I wanted to do that free willy shit. And yeah, notice that you can't do that free willy shit. There's no free willy shit when you get into marine biology. Like, lots of biology. When you get marine biology, there's way too much of that non-fun shit. When biology and marine biology, aquatics of biology, comes together, it was, I dropped out of that shit. It would have been nice to continue with Spanish. I was pretty good with Spanish, but the Spanish that I took in college was very advanced, and it was at 8 o'clock in the morning. I was like, "Nah, fuck this. For 3 hours? Nah, I dropped that shit." So, yeah, I hated school, man. I don't even know why. I went to college because my mama had got money my grandma had got money because she teach piano to these white folks. And this white folk was like, "Yo, I ain't got no money to spend on my grandson besides this piano money. So here, let me give it to this needy nigga kid that might need it." And they swindled it, and so they paid for 2 years of my college. Man, I did 2 years of that shit. It was wild. Like, my mom, so my mama's situation, okay. This is my mama's side of the family. Now, my dad's the one who raised me, but my mama, my mom was in jail when I was little. I am a fucked up individual. When I think about all this shit, I'm very fucked up because I just had to process this on my own, all of this. And I had no idea how to. No one told me what to do with it. But as I was young, my mom was in jail. My mom was in jail for selling crack or something like that. I'm not really sure. She real gangster. She gangster. Like, I'm pretty sure she stabbed some people or some shit like that. She's done a lot. And I didn't know. Like, no one told me that she was in jail. It just one day, like, I'm 8 years old, and I'm at my grandma's house, because, you know, I used to go over by my grandma's house, because she had a three-story house. I used to sit down at the bottom. I used to sleep at the bottom. I used to sleep downstairs in the den area. They had a TV, and it was a little library area. They had a TV there. My mama used to cut me on some chopped up weenies. And I would sit there and I would eat chopped up weenies watching the original Jungle Book, original Mowgli, the naked Mowgli running through the woods and shit. But yeah, those are those memories. And so I used to go by my mama, and I remember one time, like, she just, for a while, she just wasn't there. And, you know, my dad would be going to drill, and I would still go over there by my grandma. You know, I always wonder where my mom at, and I forget what they would tell me. They'd be like, "Oh, she not here, oh, she visiting somebody," or some shit like that, whatever. And one day the phone rang, and I answered the phone. And it picks up and it said, "Would you like to accept this call from
Aida Marsha. It's like, oh, yeah, and I was like, sure, and then called from the prison. And I was like, huh, and I gave the phone to my grandma, and I was like, hey, grandma, this is, this is my mama. She's like, oh, give me that, boy. And she took the phone, and then, like, my mom was on the phone after that. I was like, oh, that seems kind of weird. Sounds like you're in New Orleans Parish Prison. One of the things that they was trying to hide from me is that she was in jail. She was in jail for a while, for a very long time. And then once I found out, that's when we finally got to go see her. We finally got to go to the jail and actually visit my mama through the glass. Oh man, I don't remember how long I was doing that for, but that was wild to see. I remember my mama was making, I think she was making license plates or some shit like that. But that might be the joke, that motherfuckers go back there and make license plates. She was making some shit. I don't know. I don't know if I was right into it or not. It was very, very crazy. I'm like 8, you know. I'm not prepared for that. And my grandma, she a Jehovah's Witness. So there's certain things that she should do that she don't be doing, that she do be doing, you know. She ain't supposed to do certain things. She's like, fuck that. It's so crazy because she don't really give a fuck about no. But she ain't really get, at that, she ain't give a fuck. She uptight. She still don't give no fucks about it. Anyway, so by the time she finally got out, it was just all strange. And I was like, I never really asked. I think I asked my daddy or something like that. But, you know, I'm like, whatever. And I just threw it behind me. I was like, okay, I guess that happens. That's life. And that's all cool. You know, I still stay with my dad, and I would go visit my mom every now and then. I remember at one point, my brother just had it with my grandma, and fucking my brother didn't talk to my grandma for like years because my grandma had cursed me out and left me on the side of the road or some stupid shit. Well, she was mad or something, left me on the side of the road. Oh man, wild! I was like, what the fuck is happening? I was like, I thought we were just gonna see my mama. Why am I mad like this? It's so crazy. But yeah, when my mama got out finally, you know, me and my brother would go visit my mama from time to time. And no one ever really told me what my mama does or what she, you know, what she's about. You know, I just never asked. I just always saw, you know, my mama as this gangster motherfucker, fucking strong, you know, cool. My mama cool as shit, man. She cool as shit, yo. To be like, that's a cool motherfucker. Like, I love my mama. Yeah, she struggles. She go through a struggle, but man, badass like a motherfucker. Like, she bought her baby. She love her baby. I'm her baby. She love her baby. And so I just never asked. I just was always happy to see my mama because I didn't get to see her as often. You know, I was more like an auntie's baby. My auntie raised me a lot most of the time. I was by my auntie a lot. But that's a whole other story. We'll get into stories like these from time to time. I got them all chatted down and shit. But yeah, being raised, going to see my mama, every time I would see her, she would always have this friend that would always give me toys. Any of her friends would always give me toys. And I remember I like won the best because she gave me the best toys. Every time I would go see her, she would give me toys. To this day, like, I'm pretty sure that person would still give me toys. I never thought anything of it, you know. I was just like, oh man, this is one of my mama's cool friends that she she always got a toy for me to play with, or she every time we come to see her, she give me a toy. And, you know, I'm like, I never understood who these, why they would always, at the time, I never understood why they would always give me toys. But now that I'm older, I know why. But it was so crazy. Because I remember my mom would always be so close with these people, with her friends. Like, you know, they would always go in the room and be looking at porn on the room by themselves. I'm like, why y'all looking at big black greasy dicks? Why y'all looking at greasy dicks right now? I don't know, what are y'all doing? Why y'all looking at greasy dicks?
Yeah, it was something wild to walk in on. Yeah,
my mom and them, she was wild, and I remember, like, each of her friends, she was always close with. But, you know, we would never stray away from by their house. It was usually just, we always by their house. I'd sit in the front room watching cartoons, playing with the toys or whatever. And they would be in the back. I remember one time I was riding with my mama and my brother and one of my mama friends, and I seen a picture on the floor of my mama's car. So I picked it up and looked at it, and it was a picture of my mom and her friend, and it was like a Valentine's Day picture, and, you know, they were like hugged up, like a prom date type. And I'm looking, and I'm like, y'all real good friends, and so y'all taking Valentine's pictures like this. And I'm like, I think I'm like 16 now. And it fucking dawns on me, and I look at my brother, and he been staring at me the whole time as I'm looking at this picture. And I look back at the picture, and then I look at my mama and her friend in the front seat. And then I look back at my brother, and I'm like, hey, mama gay? He was like, I don't know, ask mama. And I'm like, nigga, tell me, sir, mama die? He's like, ask her. I was like, man, I can't ask. He's like, ask her. So I was like, Maya Dyke. And she was like, boy, what you say? I was like, no, Maya, right? She was like, that's not what you said. I was like, yeah, no. I was just asking if you was all right. Just checking on you, you know? She was like, yeah, I'm all right. And then I looked back at my brother, and he just laughing. He's like, you stupid. And I was like, son, why didn't you tell me, son? He didn't say nothing. I just kind of put two and two together from then on. And, yeah, at the age of 16, I found out that my mom was gay. That was wild. It was just something I had to deal with, because I already at that point, you're already trying to figure out what's what and what's not, especially being in high school, being the only male cheerleader, not being the gay one, but having other gay male cheerleaders wanting to hit on you and not understanding that, why are you gay, how come you're gay, why do you, what makes you attracted to a man, and being confused by that. Being in high school, definitely confused by that. And then finally finding out that my mom is gay, and then just like, well, fuck, how am I here? Like, if she, like, how does that work? Like, this doesn't make sense. If you're gay, then how do I get here? Like, what do you, you have to have, like, you like the penis somehow. You like dick, right? You take, and, you know, boom, another conundrum. I'm not really sure how to react or how to go about that in life. I just throw it to the back, like, ah, well, I guess this is what this is like. I asked my mom about did you know you were gay? Were you born gay? Or, you know, did you turn this way because you played with trucks when you was little? She's like, no. Pretty sure as soon as I came out the womb, I was born this way. She's like, she don't know what it is, just a feeling. And I was like, what? Basically, she's bi, but, you know, she wear the pants of the family. She do. She wear the pants in the relationship. I learned to eat pussy from my daddy and I get my dick from my mama. So, so yeah. Because the Smith boys really know how to eat some pussy. But yeah, you know, once that hit me, I was just like, well, fuck religion, right? I don't know what this is needed for. That totally went out the window. I wasn't sure how to think. Yeah. But, you know, you deal with it after that. That's life. I was actually the wing bearer at my mama's wedding when she got married. She got married in Atlanta, like not too long after Katrina. And yeah, it was nice wedding. You know, I felt proud. I got to see my mama off and shit. You know, it was like, oh, well, boom, this is life. That's what it is. Just something else to think about. As you getting older, trying to figure out what the fuck you gonna do with your life, where you gonna go, what you supposed to do, you know? I had no idea. Fucking finally got out of college, I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do now. Like, I appreciate this man for giving my mama all this money, you know? My dad make too much money, so I had to. File fast food through my mama. And, you know, that's it. Grants, Pell loans, money from this nigga. 2 years. 2 years wasted. Because, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, it'd have been nice if I'd have had a guideline. It'd have been nice if somebody would have told me, hey, no, be creative. Keep creating. Don't stop. My dad's an amazing artist. My mom plays the bass. And she plays the piano. She plays all types of music. Writes. You know, I'm supposed to be an entertainer. But nothing tells you that. Nothing gives you that path. Just shit happens in life. 2 years of college. 2 years, finally got out, didn't know what the fuck to do. Well, actually, that's how college kind of ended. Katrina happened. 2005, August, Katrina hit. I was at Southeastern. Most people went to the Dome at Southeastern. I went to Texas. 15 hours, fucking, 15 hours would have normally took 8 hours. riding there with my auntie and my mom and my brother and all them. That's when I found out my mom was smoked for the first time. Boom. Like I said, cool ass mom, man. All the way on to Texas. Everybody stressing. Me, my brother, and my mom, we blowing. Shh, can't deal with it. Gotta go. Moved all the way to Texas. Was wondering what the fuck. what the fuck them niggas gonna do. Yeah. We had no idea. So after Katrina happened, we came back. And me and my brother, we started working with my uncle. We started working with my uncle doing construction. You know, we had a few carpenter skills. I'm good with my hands. We good at anything, you know. Real good with our hands. We like to fix shit. I've always liked to fix shit. I like erector sets and shit. I like chemistry sets and all that. I like to build things in that genre. You know, daddy always still a work ethic in me. Yeah, I need a new pair of socks, daddy. You go buy you a pair of socks. Stop walking around barefooted. Put some shoes on your feet. You won't get holes in your socks. You got holes in your socks. I ain't buying you no new pair of socks. Better buy your own damn socks. So, I got me a job. Yeah. And doing construction soon with my uncle. We rebuilt houses after Katrina. And it paid well. It paid pretty good. It paid enough for us to, me and my brother, to go move out to Atlanta, to Georgia for like 6 months, and to keep coming back and forth every weekend to work just to pay bills and shit. And, you know, that was a nice life. Not having to actually, you know, only working 2 days, being able to pay bills, and the rest of the week you just, well, Superman himself, my brother, was paying most of the bills. I don't know how he was fucking doing that. You know, I helped with some of the bills, but, you know, I wasn't really paying as much as he was paying. Not, man, he was getting it in. It's just, that's how it was instilled. That's what made us. You know, me being able to work with my brother like that, it would come together and see, oh, it works for him. I know it could work for me. You know, so we just worked hard, man. We would build buku houses, like at least 3-4 to completion, you know, back up and running. The house that my grandma's staying in now, we rebuilt that motherfucker. Fucking remodeled it, added shit, took shit away. Like, it felt good. But once that money started to run out, my uncle's like, man, I ain't got nothing for y'all to do. So, look, that's what I'm going to do. Look, these people. Yeah, because my uncle, a lawyer, this is somebody that he worked for. He was like, they got an electrical company. Y'all go ahead and fucking fill out an application, try to get on, right? So he was like, all right, shit, next job then. You know, marine biology wasn't going to be my thing. I enjoyed working. I don't want to be behind no desk. I'm tired of fucking learning and shit. I don't want to learn. There's nothing that I want to study. Yeah. I'll go ahead and get this job, get this money real quick. Shit, be set, you know, get my picket fence in the yard, you know, my 2 kids and a lady. Shit, the American dream, basically, you know, fucking barbecues on Independence Day, that type of shit, flag on the front, hoorah, you know, but we went and filled out the application. Be electricians. We went down there on a Friday. Motherfucker was high Monday. And that was way back when. That was 12 years ago. That was 12 years ago I got hired on as an electrician. Went to school for 4 years. ABC school up in St. Rose. Got my certification as an electrician. Certified electrician. Get up every day. 7 a.m, work till 3. 7 a.m, work till 3. Off on weekends. Every day. Since basically 2005, every day. I gotta be at work for 7. So that means I gotta be up for like 6, maybe 5, depending on how far I gotta drive. Every day, Monday through Friday, off on weekends, going to school on weeknights, yeah, every day, yeah. But it's crazy because work is so much like that. You don't, it just becomes second nature. Like, that's what you do. Like, that's how my daddy was raised. That's what he did. That's what, you know, that's what's got us here. That's what got us the ball game. Yeah, I was such a bad kid. I was kicked out at the age of 18. And I had to go stay with my 18. So, you know, I kind of been gone since then. Especially after college. Bouncing around with my brother and them. But I ain't been with my dad since then. Since the age of 18. Ever since. You know, I know I got a place to go. It's not like ain't no bridges been burnt in them like that. I was just at that time. You know, so everything's good. Yeah, my family loves me. I'm just saying, you know, that's the type of upbringing I came from. And, we're going to be an electrician. It fucking opened the door just for so much just income to come in, so much knowledge, you know. It's just like, oh, this is what I want to do. I like this. This is cool. I'm building shit. Like, that took that little bitty erector set that I had and, like, made it full-scale models. You know, I'm out here pointing that shit in my city that I'm in, saying, oh, look at that, nigga, I did that. Oh, look, you see them lights up there, nigga, I did that. Nigga, the Superdome shit? Yeah, nigga, I mean, I ain't had nothing to do with that, but, you know, I know niggas that did that. Yeah, fucking right. I got with this company called All Star. I don't need to give them too many props, because fuck them, it's some racist cunts, but they did hold the nigga down, and that's what's up. Like, they really gave a nigga an opportunity. Like, that life back then, it was rough. But to be able to gain that knowledge of a skill, like, I can't get taken from me. Like, yeah, I appreciate them for that. You know, but fuck them. But thank you. I'm good with these hands, and when it comes to this electrical shit, I'm damn nice. I ain't got no journeyman's card, because like I said, I hate learning, and I don't want to have to learn anymore for shit. But, you know, that was what I was doing after Katrina. Boom, that. Ain't nothing dawning on me that, oh, you know, maybe you should be, you know, taking those things that you used to write down and craft them into some type of comedic joke. Nah, ain't nothing saying that, you know. I'm just working, trying to fucking live life, trying to live that American dream, because that's what was instilled in me. That's what my daddy told me to do, so I was going to do that. That's what I was going to do. I was going to get me a wife, settle down, and do everything, you know. Either since I wasn't a football star, you know, that I was just going to have these fucking cheerleading trophies and accolades to say that, oh, look, this is what your daddy did. You know, your daddy had dreams and ambitions. Look what I used to draw in class instead of actually chasing that dream. This, I would have just had something to show for. That was it. And, you know, and nothing tells you. And like, my dad draws amazing. My dad just draws amazing. Yeah, but he had to provide for his kids, so he had to put that fucking utensil in. He had to put them easels up. He had to put the pens and the paintbrushes up. He had to provide for his kids. I ain't got no kids, because I pull out on time. I get the fuck out of there, man. So, to say that I ain't got no kids, 34 years old and where I'm at now, you know, it would have been nice if somebody would have gave me a guideline to chase a dream. I'm still being an electrician, not knowing what the fuck I want to do in life. I go out, my friend Ian, the one that I used to get into mischief with, yeah, We used to do some fucked up shit, but that's these stories I let y'all know about later. He took me to my first football game. First football game, first NFL Saints football. He's a big Saints fan. Took me to my first Saints game. And, you know, I was riding with him and his brother, you know, it's about 7 years ago. Riding with him and his brother, and we was having a good time, just shooting the shit, talking, you know, and I'm just pointing out the obvious, you know, being myself, being my little bubbly self, and just, everybody's just dying, laughing, cracking up, having a good time. And, you know, I'm just being me, being honest, but just, you know, in my honest way, how I normally am. And I didn't think it was that funny. I mean, it was funny though. I was killing that day. And he, as we was talking, he was like, "Yo, man, son, dude, you're funny. You ever thought about being a comedian?" And boom, right then and there, I had that That's So Ravens moment. That moment where all my entire life flashed before my eyes. Fucking just everything. Catholic school, private schools, fucking public schools, nigga bullies, Catholicism, mama gay, daddy stern, like all of that flashed before my eyes. And I was just like, "Wait, what?" He was like, "Yeah, dude, you're fucking funny. You ever thought about being a comedian?" And I was like, "Nah." He was like, "Man, maybe you should try." And from then on, my altered. From that day, that's when I knew I wanted to be a comic. And that's when I knew, like, oh, I have something special that's going to take me far. That's when I understood that comedy is, a comedian is what I want to be, who I want to be. And this is why I'm here now, in LA. Away from my friends, away from my family, away from people that I know dearly, away from people that are close to me. I came here to chase a dream. Because I know that there's only a few places that you can go for, like, they're the meccas to where your career will accelerate. And I felt this was one of the places to come to, LA. LA was a place for me because it's big, it's spacious. I don't like to be crowded. So it's either LA or New York for the big meccas. And people probably, you know, or Chicago or Oregon, whatever. And who cares? LA was a place that I was gonna go to. And I knew I was gonna have to give up a lot. I knew I was gonna have to struggle. It's kind of like my Jesus moment, you know, how Jesus had to carry that cross, had to go through the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and you will deal with agony. You will deal with pain. You will deal with hurt. You will deal with heartbreak. You will deal with everything that the world and the universe can put against you. And basically, this is what I'm going through. This is what I want to do, and this is what it's taking to chase this dream. All those things, like, until now, finally told me that, oh, yes, that I want to be a comedian. And finally, I finally got to that point to where, I'm a dreamer. I'm a big dreamer. And I know I'm going to have to fight for this. This ain't been easy. Saying I gave up a lot, you know, but the skill of being an electrician certified gave me the currency to get around and get about. I haven't been without a car ever since I've had a car, and I've been through some cars. I've had my luck, and it's been terrible. But I was capable. I'm capable of not having to go at least 5 days without having a car if anything happens. And so I have a. Before I left, I gave up. I sold everything. I gave my notice to my landlord. I told my friends. I spent the last few days with my mother and my girlfriend. And I packed my car. And I drove to Texas first. I drove to Texas to drop some shit off. I had to drop some shit off and fucking gather myself because I was gonna be gone. I've been in New Orleans 34 years. 34 years of my motherfucking life. And I finally was like, fuck it. I gotta make this move. This is what I wanna do. I've been practicing and grinding for 7 years. I need to make this next step. And this was that next step to come out to LA for me. And now that I'm out here, it hasn't been easy. The car that I came out here was a Honda Sonata. I was financing it, and also had to pay insurance on it. Insurance was pretty high. Never had my own insurance due to other stores, but yeah. So through the grace of God, I had a vehicle. Yeah, leaving from Texas, took that Honda Sonata and drove 23 hours nonstop all the way to LA until I got here. I didn't stop till I got here. 23 hours and 2 grams of weed. Woohoo, I made that 2 gram stretch, but I made it here. I gotta split it with tobacco. But, you know, people say, how did I do that without going to sleep? I stopped to gas up and take a piss and shit or whatever I needed to do. And fucking trail mix, vitamin waters, and 2 Arizona RX cans. 2 Arizona RXs and a vitamin water energy. And trail mix, 2 bags of trail mix. Mixed nuts with the fruit and yogurt. Yeah. Boom, 23 hours. All the way. Now I stop. Till I got here. When I got here, it was raining. And it's weird because people was like, why is it raining? It don't rain in LA like this. And it rained for a good 2 weeks. 2 to 3, no, it rained for that whole month, to be honest with you. People was like, oh, what the fuck's going on? It is a new world. It is like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It is exactly like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I'm seeing Hollywood from behind the scenes, you know, before they pull the curtains back. But when you finally get here and you get close up to it, it's like, oh, nigga, this shit grimy. It's like, whoa. You know, and I get here and I pull up and I stay up in Van Nuys. This is where I stay. Stay in Van Nuys. Lots of Mexicans out here. Lots of Mexicans. Oof, calm it down, Mexicans. Jesus. But love the tacos. And yeah, it ain't been easy. You know, first day since I moved out here, I got my tears out. I loved on my old lady before we left. I said bye to my mama. And when I got out here, I moved in with these German chicks, Airbnb. Now, I want to shout out to my homie Jake Costin. because I got people watching out for me. He paid for my first month's Airbnb. I ain't gonna lie, no fronts, man. I appreciate it. I love that nigga, man. Appreciate that. Cause it fucking my whole plan when I first came out here, cause I had a plan, but I knew I was gonna need I was gonna use my work skills, my work ethic to do what I needed to do, because nigga, my dad instilled in me, hey, bitch, you gonna work for what you need, for whatever you want, you gonna work for it. And I ain't gonna be no homeless nigga out here. I'm gonna work for mine. So that's what I was gonna do. And if I had to sleep in my car, I'd have slept in my car because that's my car, and I was with it. But hey, I had a homie that was able to fucking give me an Airbnb for a month. So I was like, all right, cool. I appreciate that. Nigga, this Airbnb was terrible. Like, nice Airbnb, but I'm thinking that, you know, the Airbnbs I've been in before were Airbnbs that I could, you know, we can go in the elevators. We had our own little private rooms, floors and shit. The owners wasn't there, all right? That's the Airbnbs I'm used to. Motherfucker, owner's not there. That is, it's wild to see when the owners are there and shit. And this Airbnb had both of the owners there. It was a German lady and her daughter, a sister. I don't know. Seemed like some type of porn category. You know, to the daughter and sister, mother and sister, daughter, black guy and two cats, some shit like that. Yeah. I don't know. But it's very strange because I wasn't prepared for the uncomfortability that I was gonna stay with. Like, I've lived with people before. Like, I've lived with one other person before ever in my life that was not related to me. But he was a homie, he was a close friend. You know, so I've never had to live with somebody that I had no type of connection with at all besides interaction over a text message. Like, I don't know who these people are. And when I get to this Airbnb, like, they speak very little English. They speak English, but they also speak German, some shit like that. And I gotta acknowledge the cats when I get there. Fuck cats. I hate cats. But apparently you gotta acknowledge the cats. And like, I'm thinking that I get this whole little place. No. When you rent a room to the Airbnb, like, I ain't know this shit. So when you rent a room, you just get that one room, and that room is yours. Like, and then you gotta share everything else with these people you don't know. And I think I'm allergic to cats. Secondly, like, you know, I'm not really sure. I know my eyes swell up. One of the cats wouldn't leave me the fuck alone. He would always come in my room and fucking bury himself in my dirty clothes hamper and just stay there. And I was like, what the fuck? I don't care for you, cat. Like, why are you here? I would close him out the room sometimes, and he would swipe at me from under the door. It'd be the cutest shit ever, but scary when you high at like 2 a.m. You know, you just see a little bitty fucking paw swiping at your toes and shit for no apparent reason. Fuck this cat. Why I gotta acknowledge these cats? You know, why do y'all speak English around me? I don't like it. It's very weird. One of them was in college, I believe, and she didn't say shit. I thought she was gonna poison me at some point in time. You know, I thought she was gonna be in my closet. Like, I thought she was gonna be hiding in the closet one day just to scare the shit out of me for some reason. I wasn't too sure about her. And I was only there for a month though. I was only there for a month. Like, what am I gonna do after this month is up? Like, as soon as I got out there, I started looking for jobs. As soon as, like, I just started calling places. Because, like, I had no job. Like, I had no job when I got out here. Like, I know that I have these skills as an electrician, 12 years in my belt, and all the criteria to back it up, you know, because, hey, we had to just up and become electricians one day because we needed to keep working. So look how that worked out. And now I'm out here just calling, making calls and shit. like, hey, I got this many years experience, yada, 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 hitting people up. And finally comes through within a week, I was able to land a job. And within a week and a half, I was working an electrical job, doing being an electrician. I'm out here doing electrical with an all-Mexican crew. Not prepared for that all-Mexican crew, though. And niggas worked their ass off, and I was like, I swear, as soon as I got on, I was going to get fired immediately. Like, they look at me like, nigga, what is you doing here? I'm like, nigga, I don't know. What am I doing here? Nigga, what am I doing here? That's what I'll be trying to figure out. It's like, wow. Like, I am the only minority on that motherfucking group. It's the only one in that, in the whole company. I'm the only one. It's so wild out here. It's so strange. It's so different. And that first month, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, now this job pays me every other week now, okay? Every other week. So I'm barely just getting by, nigga. Barely just scraping by. Nigga, it's not easy. It's a grind out here. Everything's expensive. Nigga, I went from gas being like $1.98 to motherfucking gas out here is like $4.96 and shit some places, man. It's like, man, what the fuck? You know? I came out here with like $1,000 or something like that. $2,000? I don't know. That number don't matter. I didn't come out here with much, really. But I understood that I got this job. That's the second thing I needed to do. You know? See, for people that go places, don't go there without no skill. Don't go there without no backup, thinking that, oh yeah, just this dream that I'm gonna have is gonna be, nah. You're gonna need to work for it, and you're gonna need to put in that time. You know, ever since I started doing comedy, like, that's all it's been. Work, get up 7:30 in the morning, fucking get off at 3:30, take a shower, boom, go hit the mics up, get on that stage. You know, and I did that. I did that for 7 years. Did that 6-7 years, and I'm constantly keep doing that. I'ma always do that. And I wish I didn't have to have a job to do that, but that's what I gotta do. You know, I know I'm gonna make it. I know this is my dream. And I got a partner that created a crew. He created a group, and we a ragtag group, man. Fucking Young Funny, that's the homies. You know, I do this for them. I do this for me. But I also do this for other people. Got a homie that passed away coming out here trying to chase this dream. And I'm out here doing the same thing. Trying to relive in his footsteps. Try to do better. Try to make it for us. For that nigga. You know? And shit ain't fucking walking through meadows, it ain't dandelions and daisies. Now, as soon as I fucking got out of that first place, second place that I went to, found another Airbnb. Thought that the Airbnb situation was going to work. That got ruined quickly. That's not the way to go. Yeah, it's way too expensive out here for that. You know, so I had to think, well, okay, I can go ahead and get this Airbnb since the prices are getting raised up. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to have it for. You know, I'll check in the next 2 weeks. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay for this. And so it was just like barely skinning my teeth on certain things, having to ask people, fucking having to humble yourself. To get, hey, can I pay you this? Can I pay you that? When we get this and that, you know, actually having to get by. I got to my second Airbnb. Haven't had to sleep in my car yet. And I was like, all right, now my next move, what's going to be the next one? This next one was he was a Rico Suave ass nigga. He was a very suave ass fucking Mexican Chicano. I don't know. He He ain't hanging that look like he drive a Harley and drink Cerveza, I said, in the morning. He was one of those things. I never seen him. I only seen him one time. One time. And it was just so, it was so weird to see that, to go from the people being there to like, nah, this nigga, I had my own little room in this Airbnb, which had its own little fridge and shower, so I could stay secluded, but you know, everything else to that apartment was open. I could lock the room and shit. It was just, it's just another weird situation to another weird situation. But I understand that that's, hey, I'm gonna have to be uncomfortable. And I knew, but I gotta keep moving. I gotta keep going because this is what I wanna do. This is where I wanna be. And, you know, it hasn't been easy at all. This doesn't get easy. You know, I've gotten to this. Once that Airbnb ended, okay, I've only been out here for 4 months. We're kind of wrapping up to the end. This is kind of where it all ties in at. I've only been out here for like 4 months now. I was fortunate enough to be able to get on to LA Gypsy on Facebook to find a place where people were renting out rooms in the apartments, I mean in the houses, where you can be a part of this, you can be another person that rents a room. And so the first place I checked out, it was just too much. Living with two other people that I wasn't prepared to live with in very close proximity to each other. It was very cluttered, but it was another situation that I was going to deal with to get to where I need to go. Because I'm like, fuck it, I got to do something. I got to live out here. I got to survive. If this is what I'm going to do, I got to survive somehow, and this is how I'm going to survive. You know, I kind of put myself in the trenches, and it's like, all right, nigga, eat. How you going to eat? And this is what I had to do, and this is what I'm doing. And I'm eating right now. Like, it ain't easy, but I'm eating. Like, I seen, like, the first place, I was like, man, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do this, you know? It was a small little place. They wanted me to pay so much. You know, I was like, all right, I can do this. I can afford this. That's doable, but, you know, will I be able to stick with this? This is the place that I'm gonna have to have permanent. You know, it's not no Airbnb situation. It's a month-to-month situation. Now, if I'm going to be renting this room month-to-month, but be able to use the whole house, and it's just a few of us there, I can deal with that. And that was the route that I was going to take. And I was like, all right, cool. Checked it out. I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to call you back. And I'm like, fuck. If something else don't fall through, I'm going to have to take this. And then, fucking second call that I made with this house that I'm staying in now. Fucking got a nice roommate. This house that I'm staying in now is up in Van Nuys. Everything's in the vicinity. Everything's in the vicinity of where everything was at. Like, the first Airbnb was close to the second Airbnb, and then the third place that I looked at, it was right around the corner from where I'm staying now. So everything was in the same area. And then where I work at, my job's like 20 minutes away, you know. But still, even though those things have lucked up, even though the universe is on my side for that, it's still, you know, you still got to pay the cost for that. You still got to just, it feels like there's still a price that I had to pay for the luck that I was getting, you know. Even though I made it out here and I was able to find a living situation, the second place I lived to find a living situation, the way things worked out here, is very crazy. Still don't say that, yeah, things are gonna be all hunky-dory. Like, when I first moved here, I guess I should tell this. But yeah, when I first moved here, really wasn't sure how I was gonna pay the rent. Like I said, you know, you ask for favors for favors, just word of mouth, no contract, just hoping that, hey, man, we all trying to get it out here, we all trying to live, we all trying to eat. She's an artist too, you know, she's an actor. And I was like, ah, shit, yeah, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. And so, you know, it got to the point to where we was finally able to come to an agreement, and I was able to go ahead and stay out the rest of my stay at that last Airbnb and come to this new place, which was the second phone call I got. And I was like, oh, okay, this works. Now this place comes with two pit bulls, but free access to everything. And it would come with another roommate. And I wasn't too fond about having another roommate. And I'm like, all right, so whatever. You know, three people, this is a big enough space. I went to see the space. Space is big. Seen the dogs. Dogs are beautiful. Nice backyard. We plants growing in the backyard. Love that shit. You know, I got a little green thumb. You know, I used to grow on the feather now, but I can't grow no more. Don't worry about that. And I'll tell you that some other time. But yeah, I fucking dig it. I'm like, shit, yeah. You know, when I first moved here, I had to break up a pit bull fight, which gave me this bed that I sleep in. Boom. Just universe coming together. I love it. I love it, you know. And that pit bull shit's another story, which could be saved for another time. But understand this shit ain't easy, you know. Now, I've been out here for quite some time. I've done comedy. I've done mics. You know, this is my dream. This is what I'm coming to chase out here. These mics ain't easy. Like, I'm nice, though. I'm nice, no lie. My poetry's nice, too. I got two level playing fields that I can go and dabble between. You know, when I first got out here, that was what gave me my first paying gig, was the poetry. You know, I needed to do something just to feel like I belong somewhere, entertainment-wise, because this comedy scene out here is terrible. Coming from New Orleans, man, the comedy down there is loving, it's family, it's heartwarming, you know, it's encouraging. They're there to help build. Out here, you know, there's no building. There's so many goddamn people, man. They disperse as soon as they done whatever they're doing. Most places you go to is just comics. You can't talk to people. There's no audience. It's wild. It's a different dynamics than I know I'm in the trenches. But I'm good, though. I'm nice. So, coming out here, that's what I was prepared to do. And It's gotten terrible. Like I said, I'm the only black guy that I work at my job. I've been threatened to be like fired so many times. You know, I just got this job. It's the only job. I don't know if I can get another job. Y'all threatening to fire me because I don't work like the rest of these Mexicans. Yeah, you know, they give and then they take. Like you get the luck. But you also get the backlash in return. Like, yeah, it ain't nothing gonna come easy. It's not. I gotta work extra hard now just to keep up with these motherfuckers so I don't get fired. And then on top of that, I gotta make sure I can pay these bills. When my check comes every other week, man, shit gets skimpish. It gets real close, you know. Riding out here this whole time, man, around Cinco de Mayo, motherfucker smashed into my car. My car got totaled. The car that I rolled out here with, 23 hours, got me all the way up here. Still financing it. Total. I'm out here by myself. What the fuck am I gonna do? I'm stuck. Fuck, I'm gonna get out of this. This shit ain't easy, sir. This shit. Like, you can't. This ain't no walking state. You can't just be walking around now. Everything far. I ain't got no bike. I can't bike my electrical tools to work. The fuck am I gonna do? I got insurance, you know. I was able to get insurance and shit. I mean, yeah. Being an adult, doing the adult shit that you gotta do, that still don't prepare you for life's mishaps. Well, I'm sorry, it does. Because I was ready. But knowing that I'm going to have to work extra hard now, and knowing that I'm back in the hole, thought that I was going to be good, still struggling, you know. 2 days after that, about a week, I had a rental, which was nice, but I had to pay for my own rental because of my insurance situation, how my insurance was. I have my own. This is what I had to do. I had to pay for my own rental. Boom. That's more money coming out of your pocket, out of my pocket, on some shit that didn't happen, that so happened in my car that I didn't do. Boom, had to get that rental back within the week. Now what am I going to do? I'm without a car in L.A. But I need a car to work. I need a car to work so I can have money to get to these mics, so I can practice to get better, so I can continue my grind to make it, because that's why I came here. But now I ain't got a car. How am I going to continue my grind to make it? At that time, you just gotta pray. You gotta pray. You can only ask so many people in your family for money. And everybody's tapped out, what are you gonna do? I don't ask people for money. I'm not one of those people to fucking, my dad always told me I gotta work for whatever I want, whatever I need, you better work for it. I'm out here working. I'm out here doing my damnedest. I'm out here working hard. What am I going to do? I guess just pray. And pray. And pray. Pray to who? Pray to what? It don't even matter. I believe in God. I'm not one of those people that don't. Like all the religions that I've been through, I know how to pray. God damn it. And I did. And the company that I work for, all the Mexicans, me being the minority, they gave me a loan. When the bank won't give me a loan, when my finances are terrible, when I'm out here and I can't get another job because I got a felony, I can't work for Postmates, I can't do DoorDash, I can't do Uber, because I got a felony. I'm a felon. So that excludes me every time I get a background check to being able to go and get this extra easy money. I can't do that. This electrical job is what I'm banking on. Because electrical pays well. Like, really well. Especially out here. If I can get all my credentials, I'll be set. Because this is a skill that is needed. Like, all of these things that I've done in my life have set me to be prepared to deal with whatever situation I need to chase this dream. And that's basically what's happening. So that my company that I've been with since I've been here decided to give me a loan. Now I'm just paying them back. And we in good graces now. We've been in good graces for a minute now. And I've actually was able to buy my own car, bought my own vehicle, got my own insurance, but I have full out bought a car. Wasn't without a car for more than 2 days. But that just goes to say that even though, yeah, whatever social media might look like, whatever you might see on Facebook and all that, yeah, all those pictures, those still moments, those recordings in time are the good shit. Nah, this podcast ain't gonna be all the good shit. And you'll be able to laugh at the good shit, kind of like the Honeydew. Shout out Ryan Sickler. But yeah, this is basically what this will be about. A guideline of chasing the dream. Because that's what I'm out here doing. And ain't nothing about to get in the way of stopping me from doing that. Shit is hard. Shit is still hard. It's getting a little better. But more and more to go ahead and knock you back down and make you think about what the fuck you doing out here. You know? You gotta have tough skin. You gotta be prepared. Especially if you're gonna chase G, you gotta be prepared. You better be good. You better be good. You better be working. You can't let nothing get in your way. You gotta be careful as well. You know? out here with all the support, all the family, all the friends, loved ones. I'll get there, you know. And, you know, after all this shit that I'm going through, you know, fucking having to get a new car. Old lady dumped me. That's happening as well. You know, so nigga single again, having to deal with that, going through emotions and shit. Dealing with a lot, but just keeping your head up, basically. You just gotta keep your head up and keep going. You know, keep pushing, because ain't nothing gonna stop me on this dream. Ain't nothing about to stop me. I'm living comfortable right now. I'm able to eat. I'm able to fucking pay my bills still, you know. I got my own vehicle now that's in my name, paid for. So I have no note. I have no finance. I don't have to finance, lease anything. You know, just pay for insurance. It's not a cakewalk, but I'm tightrope, you know? I'm on it. I'm gonna continue. I'm gonna continue this until I can't breathe no more. Like, until I'm no longer living, I'm gonna continue this journey to be a comedian, a poet, an entertainer, all-around entertainer. It's so crazy how all of that, my whole life has formed me to be this person, to be this person who I am, to be this guy. More of a, like a shock value comic, I would say. But yeah, the more I open up, you know, the more and more you hear from me, the more you hear about this. The more I talk to people, more things about me come out, more conversations. So this has been episode 1. Tell me a joke.